on Friday. You were wondering about how this weekend ahead was going to be. So how did you get through the weekend?
Oh, we got through it fine. I mean, we just quarantined at home and spent a lot of time walking around our neighborhood, which doesn't have a lot of people in it. So that's the good fortune for us. It wasn't so good for the people around the tri-state area. It was a pretty tough weekend for everybody here. And I think probably everybody in North America. I mean, it's become really, really difficult when you get text messages from friends who say significant others or family members have passed away because of this dreaded virus. It's an unbelievable thing because, you know, you don't expect to get that on any normal weekend. And so it's unfortunate. It's a really tough time for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you live in Connecticut, which is a neighbor to the state of New York, but certainly Andrew Cuomo has talked, you know, he's got these daily press conferences, right? His news conferences where he's updating everybody about the situation in New York, where you're living, what, about an hour away or thereabouts?
Yeah, we're 50 miles, exactly.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. All right, let's get to the story. Not that there's a whole lot of hockey stuff from the weekend. We brought up, because we're celebrating hockey birthdays, as a way to kind of get some conversation started. Michel Bunny Larocque from way back in the day would have celebrated his birthday today, Pierre, of course. Passed away a number of years ago. Do you know why he was nicknamed? I don't know the answer to this.
Don't know the answer to
Bunny,
that either.
No? Okay. All right.
That's a good one, though.
Has there ever been a man who's, not that he wasn't a good goalie, but who fell into a better situation than backing up Ken Dryden with arguably maybe the one of the best, if not the best, hockey teams of all time, those Habs teams in the late 70s?
Yeah, Charlie Hodge, when he was backing up Jacques Plante in the 50s.
Okay.
That was pretty good. The late Charlie Hodge is a guy I worked with. Sean would remember him from the old days from Langley, B.C. He was a scout for Winnipeg with John Ferguson Sr., and then Charlie came over to us with Pittsburgh and did some really hardy work for us. And I used to love my trips going out to Vancouver. Charlie would pick you up at the airport, and then you'd drive up the Coquihalla Pass, and you'd stay at the Dome Motor Lodge up in Kamloops, and scout through there, and you'd see Robbie Niedermeyer, you'd see all those Jerome McGinley, you'd see all those great Kamloops Blazers, Darcy Tucker, just some really fun trips. And so if you ask me that question off the top of my head, yeah, one guy, Charlie Hodge.
He was the character of all characters, and what made scouting such a special thing back in the day. As far as Michel Larocque, now I'm not going to go Bunny as far as him being born Easter week, but I'll throw that out there. what kind of starts would he get? Like, would Scotty pick back-to-backs back in the day, or like would he have tough starts? Like, how was that designed at the time?
I remember just, again, Scotty never talked to me about how he would start Bunny Larocque or any of those things, but I do know that he would pay attention to goalies' records versus other teams. So let's just say Sean Simpson's his goalie, and Sean has, you know, a 5-0 record in his last five starts against the Calgary Flames, and we're playing Calgary. Sean's starting. You know, that's just, Scotty would pay attention to those kinds of trends a lot. And so I have to imagine with Montreal, he would pay attention to those kinds of things, or he'd look at back-to-backs in terms of work-to-rest ratio for the, you know, obviously Ken Dryden at the time. But, yeah, no, that definitely something that he paid attention to.
Always difficult, and it's conjecture, but, hey, this is the times we live in to compare hockey from different eras. But if you took those Montreal Canadiens teams from the late 1970s, you got the New York. Now, it wasn't, you know, you kind of transitioned right into those Islander teams of the early 80s, then the Oiler teams of the late 80s. Is there any team, do you think, from the last 20 years, if you think, okay, we could take those athletes and put them in today's game, is there any team in the last 20 years where you think absolutely they were of that ilk where they could have run and gotten 3, 4, 5 Stanley Cups in a row?
No, I don't think so. You mean move them back from this era to that
era?
Well,
I guess my point is because the salary cap and everything has changed, so you can't keep teams together.
But if you think about
a best of team from the, you know, one team from the last 20 years that they couldn't keep everybody together, but that would have been able to get a run had salary caps not existed, let's say.
Chicago.
Yeah.
Chicago would have been that team. I mean, would they win 3 and 5 or 3 and 6?
Yep.
So they would be the team that you could probably look at and say, yeah, they're the team. Or maybe L.A. if they could keep everybody and you know, keep everybody healthy because they had the goaltending, especially in those days. Quick was as good as anybody in the league. That being said, the thing that separated those Canadiens teams, and I know that you have a lot of loyal Montreal Canadiens listeners, even though you're in the Ottawa market, the thing that separated those teams more than anything else was their depth on defense in the Big Three with Robinson, Savard, and Lapointe. I mean, all three of them are just Hall of Famers, number one, but number two, big people that could really skate. And in those days, they just dominated games. You know, there's the most amazing moment. You have the Savardian spin around me. You have LaPointe going coast to coast. You have Larry Robinson hitting Gary Dornhar for the Philadelphia Flyers and breaking the boards in the Forum in Montreal. I mean, things like that just stand out. And they had defensemen that just separated that team from everybody else's team.
You look at that team to the Islanders, and certainly in the 80s we had the Oilers and Calgary, but at what point did hockey go, I don't want to say the wrong direction, Pierre, but there certainly all of a sudden was such a turn to size away from skill. We got into a pretty nasty era. Was it supply and demand, where maybe the National Hockey League, without a real European influence and American influence, just expanded too quickly?
Well, it could be that, but I think the copycat portion of it too. We talked about Cliff Fletcher and what he did, and I think one of the things that happened with the Calgary Flames, and they became such a good team, even though they kept running into Edmonton, but they wouldn't take anybody under 6 feet unless it was Theo Fleury or Peter Lapin. Those were the only really two guys that were short players. Everybody else was 6 feet or better, and everybody wanted to try to keep up with them, and it wasn't that easy to do. You know, they lost a player who they drafted in the first round, George Palawa, who a lot of people, he never played a game in the NHL. I don't think he ever saw a day at training camp. He died in a car accident right after he got drafted, a kid out of Minnesota high school. There are a lot of people that think that he may have been, based on what he had done, maybe one of the best power forwards in the history of the National Hockey League. And part of why he was taken, not just because he was a good athlete, just his size. So I think Calgary, more than anything else, probably changed a lot of the template for a lot of teams.
That was actually my draft year, and I still remember him on the draft floor. His shirt looked like a T-shirt, and sadly, that summer, his brother was drunk driving, went through a stop sign. He went right through the windshield and died. It was actually that same summer.
Yep.
Wow. Now, speaking of sports birthdays or hockey birthdays today, Hal Gill. If you had to guess, how old do you think Hal Gill is, Pierre?
I'll say 39.
45.
Wow,
believe it or not. Yeah,
no,
turning 45. Played a lot of games with not a lot of points, but man, the enormous defenseman, right?
Well, here's the thing, great size. Here's the thing that nobody talks about enough with Hal. Hal was an unbelievable quarterback. There were a lot of people in football lexicon that thought Hal Gill was going to be as good or better than Drew Bledsoe, who is obviously a New England Patriots quarterback and was a star coming out of college in the States. There were a lot of scouts, and I have friends that run football teams that thought that if Hal Gill would have stayed with football rather than go to hockey, he would have had a chance to be a big-time quarterback. You know, with his size, 6'7", his athleticism. He's living down in Nashville right now. He works for the Nashville Predators. I see him a lot. 45. He looks real good for 45. I'll tell you that. And he's an unbelievable person. Really, really good. You think about, he broke in with Raymond Bourque. He broke in with Raymond Bourque and Don Sweeney. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I remember coming out of Providence College. People didn't think he could play. The other part that was a compliment, there were two defensemen that Jager hated to play against. One was Richie Pilon, and the other one was Hal Gill. There were games that we played against Hal Gill. I know this sounds great. Like, strangely, we had to talk him into playing just because he felt like Hal had the ability down low in the reach to neutralize everything Yags wanted to do.
Yep, and that's a fair point. It's absolutely spot on. The biggest thing, again, with Hal was his range for a big man. He skated very, very well, but a little bit like Tyler Myers, not as quick as Myers, but very similar. But the other thing, his strength. Once he got his mittens, it was a little bit like your old defenseman, Rod Langway. Once he got his mittens on you, you weren't getting away. I mean, you were thick and you were pinned and you weren't going anywhere.
Last but not least, on the birthday side of things today, Clark MacArthur turns 35. Of course,
wow.
His career has come to an end, unfortunately, too soon because of concussions.
Yeah.
His best season, Pierre, was 21 goals, 62 points with the Leafs back in 2011.
Yeah.
What was the most? Because I think we saw him here in Ottawa, got the overtime winner to beat Boston in the playoffs. But what was maybe the most underrated part of Clark MacArthur's game?
Determination. He was. I can just tell you. The World Junior team in 2005, he was a really important part of that team. He never got enough credit for the way he played and helped that team, I can tell you right now. I mean, he was just hard on it all the time. He was a guy that never gave you an inch. He and Mike Richards were, you know, depth center icemen on those teams, or that team in particular, and he was very good. But what I remember the most, and Sean would probably remember this, his junior years with Medicine Hat, he was a really he was way better than a point a game player, and he dominated in a real tough physical Western Hockey League. So his determination is the thing that never got enough credit.
Yeah, and I thought his time here actually may have been one of the better free agent signings throughout the entire National Hockey League. I mean, came in on that first contract, and you kind of looked, and you kept kind of trying to look, and that was also part of that conflict he had with Randy Carlisle, right, where Randy, old school, did not mesh very well, but he ended up being one hell of a player here in Ottawa before he got hurt.
No, he was outstanding, JR. And the thing, again, I can't stress enough on that World Junior team in 05 that just peppered with future Hall of Famers. He was a very important player when it came to big face-offs and penalty kills and things and creating energy for the better players. He was a big part of that.
So the Sens had, Pierre, this past season, three players on long-term injured reserve who didn't play any games, who helped them get to the salary cap floor. Marian Gaborik, Ryan Callahan, and Clark MacArthur. And MacArthur and Callahan are both coming, quote, off the books this year, but Gaborik's got one more year. What do you think will be, you know, if we project into next season, what do you think is going to be the effect? And these guys on these long-term injured contracts, they're starting to peter out, right? The David Clarkson, his contract is up at the end of this year. Yeah. What do you think, with, in all probability, a 20% cut in the cap, if not more, what is going to be the effect, do you think, on teams who have these players, either from Ottawa's perspective that are helping them get to the floor, or from the Leafs' perspective where they put players on that they could sign other players? Like, what's going to be the impact, do you think, next season?
It's too soon to tell, but it's going to be significant. Now, I talked to an NHL manager yesterday, Sunday morning, actually, so that was yesterday. You lose track of days. And he was very concerned about what's going to happen in terms of the cap ramifications, and I completely agree. And now he's with a team that maybe is not in as much danger as some others, but the big profile teams that have high-end players that have been signed to significant amounts of money, you know, there's the potential for 30% of their income to be gone. And so this is going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out. I can't give you an answer because I know one thing. This general manager had no answers for me. He's in on daily calls, and he would know better than anybody. He didn't know.
There has been some talk that what they might do to sort of mitigate it, because, you know, we've talked about the fact that some teams are already committed. Let's say the cap goes down to $60 million. They've already got more commitments, more than $60 million committed to next season. They might try to spread this out over several seasons. Does that sound like a workable solution to make to make it more feasible for all teams?
It sounds like a workable solution, but again, all this stuff has to be, you know, collectively bargained, and it takes two sides to get something done. And this is going to be a lot. For instance, I'll give you an example. Last week, it was reported that players were prepared to give up, some players, not all, some were prepared to give up, you know, their last paycheck so that, you know, the salary cap wouldn't have the draconian shrinkage that it looks like it's going to have. What wasn't reported in that, and this is important, is that last pay period that they were prepared to give up, and still are prepared, some are still prepared, is only a 5-day window. It's not a 15-day pay period. So it's not nearly as significant a paycheck in terms of helping the players long term as would have been the last paycheck, which was a 15-day pay period. So it's pretty significant, JR, in terms of the negotiation process and actually making sure that everybody's on the same page. It's not that easy to answer.
Well, they're going to lose that money in escrow at some point anyway if they don't play the season.
You would imagine.
Yeah, Arizona's an example of actually a team now spending money. Host has got another year left. Do we see a contract like that in the move? And part of the CBA, this is also dead money that the players are actually not getting in the sense it could be spent. Would you think that the NHLPA will look to close the loophole, the paper contracts in the next CBA?
You would think. I would think so, but I don't know that for sure. I haven't spoken to anybody from their side. You would think, but I don't know that.
All right. On that note, we will let you go. Always appreciate the visit. We'll see what transpires. Usually when we get back into the week, there is some news that starts to bubble under, so we'll wait and see on that. But in the meantime, have a safe day. Look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Jared. Thanks a lot, Sean. Be safe, everybody.